is Jace from the Comic Source here with comic writer Jeff King. How you doing today, Jeff?
I'm good, Jace. How are you?
I'm outstanding. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, happy to be here at Long Beach Comic Con.
Yeah, it's a good show. So my first question is kind of a broad question.
Okay.
Did Convergence turn out as you personally hoped? I know it was really your first time delving into the world of comics as a writer, coming from the television side of things. What did it meet your expectations? Did it exceed your expectations? How did you feel about the experience overall?
I love the experience of writing Convergence. It was an adventure from beginning to end for me, working with amazing creators like Dan Jurgens and Scott Lobdell, the artists Carlo Pagalean and Steve Segovia, the DC editorial team, and we achieved everything that we hoped to do when we set out to create the event. Whenever you put a book out, you... Hey, nice to meet you, man. Whenever you put a book out, you hope that everybody's going to love it. And I was very satisfied with it. So at the end of the day, that's ultimately what counts for me.
And it was a big learning experience too, I imagine, being your kind of your dipping your toe in the pool for the first time.
Absolutely. The process of writing TV, very different than writing for comics. And you know what, they'll announce you sooner or later. That's Kyle Higgins, ladies and gentlemen, sitting down at the signing area here at Long Beach Comic Con.
And Mark Guggenheim.
Yeah. No slouch. I think I would have been very happy to have more space, more issues to tell the story in, and I think there are still some untold stories yet to come out of Convergence. The ultimate fate of Supergirl, what happened to Parallax, where are Lois and Clark, and some of those are going to be answered in the books that are coming out in October. There are three spinoff books from Convergence. Dan Jurgens is writing Lois and Clark with their son Jonathan 9 years after Convergence. I'm taking Telos, who was under Brainiac's thumb for so long, and finally has his freedom now and is empowered to lengths that even he doesn't understand yet. And he's also been... He's been around humans for a long time, and yet he's been very isolated. So what has he learned from us? What about us has rubbed off on him? And how's all that going to drive him to find his family, help him find his family, and also to become a new person? Because in issue number 2, we're going to find out his true name and how it was that he came to be in Brainiac's service. And then there's Titan Son, Dan Abnett. I didn't even mention that. Maybe the book everybody's most excited about, because you see all those old Titan characters on the cover, and you see the No Wally. So is that going to get addressed? So I'm excited about what Convergence set up, as much as I'm excited about the storytelling. And at the end of the day, Convergence was a satisfying Earth 2 story, and the ramifications of the larger universe are still yet to be determined. So.
Okay, well, let me say from a fan perspective that for me, long term, down the road, I think people might look back on Convergence and see Telos as the most integral, most important part of that story, because like you said, with your Telos title that's coming out, he could be more, even more powerful than even he knows or Brainiac suspects. What you mentioned to me earlier about his, maybe that source of power having a tie into the entire 75 plus year history of the DC Universe, you could go anywhere any era of DC, any character, any time, and tell a story. That is something that's very significant.
Absolutely. I'm always reluctant to spoil books, but in this case, just for comics readers, I will. What Telos has is a sliver of the ultimate Brainiac's shell, which is now gone. He purged himself of all those timelines and all those powers at the end of Convergence, trying to turn back the clock and revert to who he was before Crisis and before his journey began. But like everything, those plans don't always work out the way we expect. And so that provides a great springboard for Telos, and he's going to have to go a lot further, work a lot harder, fight a lot more than you would ever imagine in order to be reunited with his family. But until then, along the way, the characters that he meets, the lives that he influences are going to be as impactful on him as he is on them.
That's got to be a storyteller's dream, though, too, being able to go anywhere and mine this rich history of the DCU.
It is, and at the same time, I'm very aware that there are so many great books right now that are mining so many characters and exploring so many different corners of that universe, and with the freedom that DCU is giving people to do limited series, do mini series. Each of our books is a 12-issue limited series. It may even be that at the end of those 12, we're all going to wind up in the same place, just to say.
That's interesting. I mean, I feel like Telos, the title itself, could end up being the most important book. It can cover so much history.
I love how you're thinking about it. Basically, his journey is a singular one. It's a very specific quest. It's unique only to him. He found out who he was before Convergence, and he wants to be reunited with his family. And nothing is going to stand in the way of that. And anything that does stand in the way of that has to be balanced against what it's going to get him. And he spent so long under Brainiac's thumb that he's not happy about being controlled in any way by anyone, even if it's for his own good.
The more you talk about the...
Do you want to take one?
Yeah. The more you talk about the book, Jeff, the more excited I am. I mean, the balance between...
I'm a fan of the work in the show.
Just signing a poster for Hand of God, which is streaming on Amazon right now, Amazon Prime.
Yeah, it's on right now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the balance between this incredible power that Telos possesses, maybe doesn't realize, the history that goes into the DCU. But at the end of the day, it's a story that we can all relate to. It's about family. So that balance, I can't wait. And hopefully our listeners can't wait to check out Telos number one, October 7th, right?
Correct.
Comes out, the first issue. Okay, maybe one more question about Convergence.
Sure.
In hindsight, having finished this incredible story as your first comic experience, anything you would change about maybe the way you approached it or the story itself?
No. Every story has many different ways to tell it, and the balance between the main story and the monthly books and which characters were available to do what things. I've been asked that question, and I'm a big fan of Secret Wars. So they're doing, Jonathan Hickman's telling his story, and we told ours. So.
Great. Okay, what can you tell me about the ending as it was planned and what actually happened? Because I remember at Long Beach Comic Expo on the panel, there were a lot of questions about, was this going to bring back the pre-New 52 DC Universe? What? And at that point, you're saying, you know what? We're still discussing that. So what can you tell us about how it actually ended versus what was originally in your head?
Well, we always knew that we wanted to address in a fundamental way the storytelling opportunities for creators. So it was always to free ourselves up to not just tell stories of the new 52 continuity, but also every continuity and every timeline. So all those Elseworlds stories,
right,
all those great universes. And that we achieved that goal. And that was always the intention from the very beginning.
So it worked out perfectly.
We'll see. Did it work out for you?
Yeah, it worked out great. And a lot of friends that I have, fans that listen to the podcast, they reach out to me and say they love what it did, because what it did was it took the shackles off. It's not, this is the current DCU, this is pre-crisis, post-crisis, whatever. It opened it up. Now, whatever era is their favorite, the door is still open to go and tell stories in that era.
Absolutely.
Maybe it was the era when you first started reading comics in high school. Maybe it was you loved the Infinite Crisis, or whatever era it was. The shackles are off. The stories can be told. And, you know, like Dan Didio said, you know, it's story first and continuity. If you can fit it in, fine, but tell a good story.
And ultimately, that's that for... And again, this is speaking of somebody who wasn't steeped in the tradition of DC, hadn't experienced the transition from Flashpoint to the new 52. So I was coming at it as somebody who saw Brainiac take a beat down from Superman in Future's End. I was coming at it as a storyteller who saw World's End take a beat down from Darkseid and Apocalypse, and six of those heroes escape. But it wasn't really an escape, it was actually out of the frying pan into the fire.
Right.
So for me, that's where I started, and taking those characters and telling that story. And I knew that they were going to go into Skartaris, where all the chrono-powered, time-enabled characters were, who would have been able to open the domes were they collected with their fellows. So, you know, a very dense, very rich event with a lot of detail and a lot of very unfamiliar characters. The Earth 2, the modern, I want to call them,
right,
Earth 2 characters are not that well known. Warlord hadn't been on stage for a long time.
Deimos
hadn't.
Right.
But they were all characters who are from the grand age of DC. I mean, Mike Grell's run on Warlord is famous.
Yeah, legendary.
Legendary. That art is amazing. You know, so it's really, some of it is, you know, dealing with the hype of a big event and the expectations and who the characters were going to be that were part of it. And I think, you know, in part, communicating that, you know, sometimes you can give a complete roadmap in advance, and other times you let people discover the book. What I'm hoping is people who maybe didn't give the event a chance because they heard that it was characters they weren't familiar with or weren't what they were expecting will pick up the hardcover when it comes out October 13th and read it, because I've read the story collected and it actually reads really well.
Yeah,
in some ways, it's a little bit like my experience on Hand of God, the binge model of a thing. If you sit down to read it as a whole, and especially experience the art as a whole, it's pretty terrific.
Yeah, Manny and I were just talking at lunch about how I think a lot of people got caught up into hearing, oh, the new 52 is ending, and they thought, oh, the universe is ending, when really it was just the trade dress that was ending. And so...
At the end of the day, I mean, that's, at the end of the day, kind of the, you know, the fun of it is, and again, I didn't really understand, you know, the full ramifications at the time, but I do now. When I started, I didn't.
Right.
It's changing everything, but it's also changing nothing. It's just, it freed the creators. It was an editorial philosophy change. Hopefully, people will get the stories that they love, and if they don't see one yet for them, one will come down the pipe. And I feel like, in a way, the Lois and Clark book that's coming is for a whole universe of fans that I heard from. the Titans Hunt book, a whole universe of fans that I've heard from since Convergence, who didn't necessarily see themselves in the DCU. And, you know, hopefully they'll give Talos a shot. Because, again, I'm taking a character who's not well-known, except for a very small sliver of DC's history, and pushing him into a story. But for me, that's part of the fun.
Yeah, well, hopefully we can get the word out. I mean, really, I feel like DC's doing such a great job with diversity, not just with gender or, people, persons of color, what have you, but diversity in opening up the doors to tell stories from their entire history.
Yeah, and I feel like they're also picking, every book doesn't have to be a continuing monthly.
Right.
Some can be weeklies, if that's the best way to tell the story. Other are limited stories, like a lot of creator-owned books that maybe, have a great 6 or 12 arc. And that's, then you do them and you see if the interest is there.
Right.
So, yeah, it's a bold time. It's a bold time for them. And Marvel's doing its own reboot. Again, same thing, and they're executing that strategy really well. So.
Yeah, and diversity of creators, too, pulling in people from other, like you came from the TV side of things. So having that different eye, different way of coming at the story, it can only hopefully help strengthen the industry and tell more stories.
I agree.
Let's talk a little bit about your major TV or film project you have going on, Hand of God.
Yes.
Amazon. I've seen the first episode. I can't wait to watch the rest.
Streaming now, Amazon Prime.
Yes, streaming now on Amazon Prime. If you don't have Amazon Prime, I believe you can go and still watch the first episode.
Correct.
Check it out.
Correct.
So, what can you tell us about the response so far from Hand of God?
People who've watched it have loved it. Your response has been very strong. There are so many characters, and it's a show that is challenging because it deals with faith and it deals with religion, but it deals with it in a very straight-up way. It doesn't make choices for you. It asks you to make choices as you watch the characters experience their journeys. We've had an amazing response because of the cast: Ron Perlman, Dana Delaney, Garrett Dillahunt, Andre Royo, Elizabeth McLaughlin, Julian Morris, Emmy Atsik Rinaldi. I mean, that's just the starring cast. And I feel like the most fun of this was working with a director like Mark Forster from World War Z and Quantum of Solace fame, but also Monsters Ball, Finding Neverland, movies that I love, with Ben Watkins' scripts. I mean, it has been an opportunity for creative freedom that Amazon offers as a company. They really let us explore our world.
Use that word, explore. I feel like, let me, in the interest of full disclosure, say I have only watched the first episode so far, but even in that episode, very appropriate, I feel, the state of the world today, exploring that theme of faith.
Sure.
And coming at it from a realistic point of view. I mean, sometimes we look around, we see all the negative things going on. There's constantly things in the news, the religious right and such, and, where do people find room in their busy lives for faith or, a God or a God-like figure? And just very, very appropriate, very real, very relatable, because we've all gone through things in our lives, maybe not to the point that Ron Perlman's character is having to go through this this incredible crisis in his life, this huge traumatic event, and leading to him questioning his faith. And, you put yourself in his shoes, what would I do? So are those some of the themes, as you approached it, as the executive producer, that you wanted to explore and feel like you would hook the reader in,
or the
viewer? Joshua Hale Piccolo, Bunker, great book.
I'm loving Bunker. What, of course, when you have a character who goes through a profound crisis, there are great opportunities to tell stories. Because the harder you challenge someone, the more powerfully they react. And the more powerfully they react, the deeper you see inside them, because they have to react honestly and without thinking. And that's what happens with Ron, with Purnell Harris, the judge, becomes a character of pure passion. And all he cares about is waking his son up. That's all he cares about. And he will do anything to make that happen. And anything turns into a voice that he hears that may be from God, and it may be because he's embraced his faith, because he's opened himself up to that possibility, and it may be that he is crazy, and it may be that his grief has driven him to hear these things that are revealing elements of his subconscious mind to him, things that he's seen that he might not remember, things that he heard that never made sense to him before, and it's his subconscious working out those details that will lead him to who hurt his son, if indeed it wasn't a suicide attempt, but maybe it was. And maybe at the end of all this, that's all it was. And he has to deal with that. So over the first 10 episodes, that will be answered. You'll find out the answer to that question. And so in that way, what was really fun about it was the plot itself, while it has some twists and turns, is relatively straightforward. What really was interesting to me was dealing with the bigger ramifications to him as a father and to him as a husband. So you're married to this dude. What do? Do you lock him up? Do you help him? You're his business partner. Do you threaten him? Do you enable him? Do you control him? You know, you're his daughter-in-law. Do you listen to him? Do you? So it's not just him, it's everybody around him, because his behavior doesn't necessarily look like madness, because he has the ability to pull it together.
Which is why I feel like Ron Perlman is such a great choice, such an incredibly talented actor, because I feel like his character, Purnell Harris, is so much a character of extremes. We see him as this judge, so dispassionate. The law is black and white. You know, make your decisions based on this. But as you said, in the series, this traumatic event happens, and all of a sudden, it's the complete opposite. He's basing all his decisions on passion.
Yep, absolutely.
Look at it as a judge. Follow the law. Do what you're supposed to do. This is right. This is wrong. Now he's becoming a vigilante. It's those dichotomies and the power and the ability to realistically portray these two extreme ends that Perlman brings to the role that I feel immediately from the first scene in the first episode where you see him in the fountain, he's got it.
Right.
Perlman's got it. He is this character.
Yeah.
Maybe the role he was born to play. I won't go so far as to say that, but is he enjoying working on the series?
Yes. Yeah, it's a character that scared him because of its extremes. And he's played some pretty extreme characters. So to have that challenge was something that he really enjoyed. And he's a producer, so he's been involved in the origin of the project. He was there from the very beginning. That was very exciting for him. Very exciting.
Awesome. Well, Jeff, I want to thank you so much for your time.
Chase, thank you.
Always good to see you.
Appreciate it.
Best of luck, Hand of God.
Thank you.
Telos, listeners, better get out there and pick it up. It could be the most important DC book coming out. Have its fingers at any point, anywhere, any character in the DC universe.
But hopefully you'll just appreciate it because it's a good story well told.
Yeah, well, and we can all relate to family. And at the end of the story, it's a story about family.
Yes, and particularly a man who's trying to find his.
Yes, we can all relate to that. All right, thanks, Jeff.
Thanks, man.